Microsoft is always working with your operational teams and your nursing teams and whoever that may be to really look at your workflow and integrate that technology into those processes.
From InterSystems, it's the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. To learn more about this and other episodes, please visit podcast.healthydata.com.
We're here today with Max Mayall, the Senior Vice President of Digital Health at Parkview Health. Max, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Good to chat. Thanks, Jordan.
So today we'll be discussing digital health and devices and care models that are changing within healthcare. There's a lot of talk about personalizing care for each patient, but there's also the idea that standardization must occur to deliver lower costs and better outcomes. Max, I'd love if you could speak to our audience about how Parkview has been personalizing equipment and tools for patients in the operating room.
In the operating room? So we want to personalize care in every aspect of care delivery. So we've been doing that through a number of different devices, whether that comes to care in the home setting or the different types of equipment that we invest in our ORs and those settings as well. So we want to be able to adjust for size and health accommodations and all of those different pieces. A lot of that personalization starts with maybe tracking some of your data, maybe being able to access primary care or get care exactly at the point where you need it. So I think it's so much more than just the operating room itself. I think It's a whole care spectrum that Parkview's really done a great job of focusing on. When you need care is really when we wanna optimize that. And sometimes that could be well in advance of your operation. And likewise, that could be in the follow-up. So for you to have success on your surgery, that may be in collecting various data points and stuff after your visit as well.
So there's a concept of smart rooms that you've been implementing at Parkview. Would you say more about that?
Yeah, so I feel like that's kind of a buzz term in the industry, smart rooms. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but what we are trying to do is enable a lot of our hospital and inpatient rooms with more technology. And some of that is technology that you may be familiar with in home settings, where it's the Alexa or the voice activated type devices. So we've certainly explored how can we better leverage voice activation to do things such as capture notes that a provider is taking, or assist with a nurse who may have both hands occupied at the bedside and they could do something via voice activation to call for help or things like that. So that I think all entails part of the smart room. And then there's lots of tools out there, whether that adjusts televisions or blinds and other things that you can control, lighting that you can control with various tools as well. One of the things we just implemented, which is pretty exciting, we have cameras in all the rooms now. And that has allowed us to expand our virtual care offerings with services like virtual sitting or virtual nursing, where we've got people in a bunker located in a different spot, a different setting, but who are able to provide bedside support, whether that's the supervision of a patient to make sure they don't have a fall if they're on a certain medication or have a certain high risk, as well as potentially offering bedside nurse relief for various tasks in the hospital. So by having these cameras out there, we're able to connect into those patient rooms and have a number of different options now for delivering either bedside care or specialty care.
Thanks for elaborating on the cameras, Max, and the smart room question that I asked. I think what you've been speaking about is a larger initiative, which Parkview has referred to as a new virtual care department that is designed to provide 24/7 access to clinical support throughout every Parkview hospital. As you alluded to, and just to, for the benefit of elaborating on this concept for our listeners, virtual nurses can be increasingly involved in bedside care, interacting with patients through the TV in the room that you just mentioned, providing education and coordinating faster discharges that could prevent serious illness or even death. An example that you've spoken of previously is reviewing patient data to detect early signs of sepsis and notify bedside nurses to initiate a care protocol if appropriate. The question I'd like to ask you, Max, is what has been the experience of standing up this new virtual care department for patients and for providers?
Yeah, so we've benefited historically here from having some virtual nurses doing our sepsis oversight. That really developed with our nursing teams and really provides second by second, essentially, overview of patients and how they're doing, and allows us to interact very early on using some predictive models as well to understand if a patient may be starting to head down that route towards sepsis. So the patients, from their benefit, they're constantly monitored in a very passive way that we can apply various algorithms and AI technology to understand, okay, this is going well or not going well, right? And jump in on care earlier than to change those paths. For our nursing providers, I think, and our teams, I think they're very appreciative of the protocols that have now come with that that allow them to make decisions quicker as well. So a lot of those components of sepsis in particular are very protocol driven. And by working with our physicians and our nurses, they were able to develop those and really get pathways for when they can intervene, and not just when they need to make a call, but when they can actually do something based on those protocols. So huge help, I think, in outcomes for our patients, which everyone's happy about. And then elaborating further on the space that we have that we just announced, we've kind of created this bunker that's high technology, a lot of resources and support around our virtual nurses and virtual technicians who do sitting for us, that that we can have everyone in one spot and really leverage the scale and scope of our health system with that resource. So you could be connected from an hour or two away at one of our rural hospitals and still connect to those team members who are all together in a bunker. That brings a couple of benefits for us, actually. So as we look at nursing and the turnover that we've seen from COVID, pretty substantial. So there's a high burnout rate for those team members, whether that's the physicality of it, the risk involved, whatever it may be. Some of it's just the aging nursing sector there. And what we found is by offering virtual solutions for them, it's a different role. It's a different nursing role, but they can apply their skills in a new way. And it's been a great tool for us to recruit and retain nursing talent as well.
Interesting. So you've actually seen reduced rates of turnover and burnout by converting four nurses into this virtual care program.
Yeah, so that may be a strong statement. I don't want to go out on record and say something that's erroneous, but I would say what we've been able to do is make a new job profile for these nurses. And so those who may have considered leaving our health system or their profession altogether, they have transitioned into those roles. And our benefit then is we get these very experienced nurses, right, who are now helping us on the virtual side.
Few questions coming up in my mind as we're discussing this virtual care department. You mentioned protocols. Generally, when someone's listening to this episode, they may think, well, that sounds good. That's data-driven medicine. However, many will also recognize, especially any medical doctors who are listening to this episode, that there's a high amount of historical variability in providing care based on residency programs and even department by department across the nation. Historically, there's sometimes been provider pushback towards moving towards best practice protocols because it differs from what they've always done and what they learned. How have you been handling that, if you've experienced it at all?
Yeah, certainly that's a big gray area, right? So as you look at digital health in general, I think there's kind of two mindsets here. One is that it's this new way of practicing, and it's jeopardizing some of the hands-on and kind of components that you referenced there that are necessary to care for the patient. I would take a different spin on that. I think there's a different camp that just says digital health is just simply part of your healthcare. And how do we incorporate that then as a way of treating you? No different than you and I are interacting over video here rather than over a coffee somewhere or a physical recording. We've taken a new medium that allows for us to exchange data and conversation and stuff in real time and interact that way. And that's what a lot of digital health is doing. It shouldn't actually produce worse outcomes. It should enable us to create better outcomes and have better data going along, because now you've got maybe more reference points, you've got ease of connectivity with patients. So the goal really is to just, I think, have digital health not be a separate kind of care, but to be embedded in care. With that said, to your point, I don't think a lot of the old protocols necessarily incorporate digital health into that, right? So as an example, maybe We're very customized to, or very used to, I guess, taking one blood pressure reading, right? So we call a patient in, they've got to drive there in our setting, perhaps in a metro setting. They drive to the office and they get their blood pressure reading after navigating our campus and maybe getting lost. And, you know, this could be a stressful environment for people. But because we had one very robust medical device reading, we count that as an accurate blood pressure reading. But in reality, would it not be better to have maybe a lesser grade device, but the readings are taken more frequently to get us a better profile of the patient? So those are things that we've developed protocols on in the past that I think we just have to change our way of thinking in the future to see how we can better mesh everything together.
That's an interesting point, Max, that you raise about having more frequency because you're able to do it at home without the logistics of having to come in for an appointment and kind of integrating care into somebody's current workflow, their normal life. You did mention real time. I wanted to ask a question about that. How has Parkview Health been implementing clinical decision support and automation in real time? And what's been some of the challenges of doing so?
I'll start with the challenge first. The challenges are really in workflow adoption. So any of this real-time sort of stuff is all new, and it generates a lot of information, potentially information that may not be useful at all to our providers. And so, you know, the word of caution there is just be careful that you don't inundate providers with useless sort of data. So how do you take that and trend it and make it valuable for clinicians to make decisions on? As health systems are trying to balance what's the risk in that, right? So if we have all this data now, are we at risk for not making a decision on something just because we had the data, but maybe it didn't bubble up to a certain escalation path? So lots of things to figure out there. The challenges, I think, continue to be in changing our workflow from what we've always done to incorporating that new technology. So that could be as simple as, you know, biomedical devices. We're not used to cleaning something that's coming from someone's home. We're not used to shipping devices to patients in the home. How do you set them up on a program? How do you even support if someone has a Bluetooth connectivity in their home? Now we're trying to troubleshoot a home environment that we've never done before. We don't know what they're connecting to on Wi-Fi. All these variables get thrown out there. So really important for us, the health system, to continue to support our patients, even as they may take some of those wearables or different devices home, and capture that data in a very meaningful way to make good decisions from. But I would contest that, sorry, Jordan, you were going to say something. I would contest that if we can get a lot of data points on that, even if it's not perfectly measured, as long as it's a reliable source measured every time, we can certainly make something of the trends.
You mentioned troubleshooting Wi-Fi connectivity with a Bluetooth-enabled device at home. I'd like to transition our conversation to the e-commerce website, in particular your partnership with Best Buy Health to launch a website where patients can buy assorted medical devices and wellness products for conditions including diabetes care, heart health, general wellness, mother and child health. Some of these items include glucose monitors, digital thermometers, fitness trackers, and patients can use compatible devices to automatically share data with their MyChart account. You've said previously that this program provides more options for seamless connections and takes the guesswork out of finding the right products. Our question, Max, is what are the consequences of patients making the wrong purchasing decisions?
So spending money that their device now can't connect in a way they want it to connect. The whole partnership with Best Buy, I'll give some context to that because it came about, I think it's really important to understand why we reached out to them and why I think we both thought this was a good idea. I went to a big box store and in their pharmacy section, I just looked at, I think it was thermometers and blood pressure cuffs. And there is an assortment of like 30 blood pressure cuffs you can buy, you know, all the way ranging from the very cheapest option of a couple dollars up to several $150, let's say, for a very nice Bluetooth connected one. And, you know, I'm in the digital health world and I don't even know which one's the right one to buy, you know. So we looked at that and said, can we work with a partner and our physicians and try to guide patients so that they're not wasting their money? So if you want, or maybe you're trying to lose weight, for example, and you've got a connected scale, the easiest way for that to just is to just go into your MyChart account for us. Our patient portal is MyChart. You just want that data entered automatically or as seamlessly as possible. And so we wanted to have our teams working together with Best Buy and choose those devices, or at least let patients know what options were a valuable investment for them and would connect to their MyChart account, so that they didn't spend $50 on a device and then have to go populate something or make it so cumbersome that they don't want to do it anymore, right? And I think that's probably answering your bigger question. The danger is that we disengage our patients because we don't make it easy for them to connect. And from a health system side, we make it too hard for them to navigate. And then you see others like Amazon and those coming into the health system arena. If they make it easy and we've made it hard, that's going to jeopardize a lot of our business as well.
So I'm interested in determining and in exploring what was driving this initiative. And there's a few topics within that. One is, again, I started this little direction of the conversation by talking about the challenges of connecting a Bluetooth device. Best Buy Health has a Geek Squad for implementation at home. To what extent is that driving the initiative? Or is this a profitable new revenue stream for Parkview Health? Remember, our audience is CIOs at large healthcare delivery systems. Is this something they want to pursue? Is this improving patient satisfaction? I know Parkview Health actually has a patient and family engagement committee. How did they request this? What's some of the driving forces behind this initiative?
Yeah, it really came down to how we wanted our patient experience, right? So we are really big on making sure that this is frictionless and seamless for our patients. So that it did come about financially, but maybe to the disappointment of health system CIOs, they're not going to make a bunch of money on this, or at least we're not. So maybe they can call me and tell me how to do that. But it's saving money for us. So it came about as we said, hey, how do we provide this home support? And it did actually come about as the two big asks for Best Buy initially were, we've got this issue. Patients are confused about going to big box stores and having to buy stuff that we don't know if they're able to connect it. And we'd like to have a say in guiding them there, but we don't want to manage all these devices. So I didn't want to have a multi-million dollar inventory of devices, nor did our pharmacy team or anyone else, of devices that, frankly, they obsolete themselves very quickly, right? They go from a 2.4 gig network to a 5 gig network or whatever it may be. And now you're stuck with all these devices. We're not in that market. Best Buy is. And frankly, we're not in the home fulfillment market where it's connecting those devices in the home and supporting those and even identifying Bluetooth issues and stuff like that. So we reached out, we said we had a problem, here's what it was. We said we would love it if Geek Squad could come help in the home. And at the time we started talking to them, they couldn't release some of their information, but I think since then they have announced that they're more in the home now than ever on these medical devices with their Geek Squad group, so they can provide support. And I thought that was really smart on their part. So for us, the financial savings was not carrying inventory and not having the fulfillment, but still giving that experience to the patients. And I think that's going to be key in the marketplace as we develop these home offerings, is supporting that for folks. So we make no money off this. What we do is we route patients to a Best Buy site. There's no financial revenue for us off of that. We just think it's a better experience for our patients, and we just recognize that wasn't our core competency.
So, Max, we are approaching the end of this podcast episode, and as we do so, I'd like to mention that you've previously described yourself as, quote, an entrepreneur at a big organization, unquote. We've spoken about e-commerce websites. We've spoken about a new virtual care department. We've spoken about integrating a partnership with a big box retail store and personalizing care and equipment for patients. I'd like to ask you to speak to our audience about the experience of being an intrapreneur, as it were, to build new initiatives and gain traction, adoption, acceptance, and overcome technical, logistical, and human challenges when you're trying to initiate these new programs. What words of advice would you give to CIOs listening who are trying to implement their own programs and are trying to overcome their own challenges?
That's a great question. So I think it's, first of all, it's a lot of fun. I have a passion for entrepreneurship. And so it's really neat on this side or this edge of the curve where digital health is growing. And so to get to navigate that with a health system, I think is, it's really special for me. I think it's great to see the impact it has on our patients and our team members that are part of this. I think they all feel the same excitement that I do. Part of how we look at our role, I think, in that entrepreneurship role is being a bridge between technology and all the cool devices that are out there, but also working with operations to make sure that that we're engaging with them and creating solutions that are helpful for our providers and our patients. So it's really easy to go out and spend money. I say that, you know, cautiously, like as long as you have the money, you can go buy products and you can, you know, buy vendors essentially that have products. But the key or the secret sauce is always working with your operational teams and your nursing teams and whoever that may be to really look at your workflow and integrate that technology into those processes. I think that's what our team has just done so well with is trying to partner with those groups. And by no means are we perfect. There, you know, not every provider at Parkview is excited for digital health. And we understand that. And we don't want to force that on providers or patients alike. We just, at the end of the day, I think we just want to create options for patients that if they want a virtual care option, we've made that seamless and easy for them to have access to. And if they want to see us in person, that's always an option at the end of the day too. So wherever the care for you may be best, we want to provide that solution.
Thank you. And again, this has been, for those of us just joining, this has been Max Mail, the Senior Vice President of Digital Health at Parkview Health. Max, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Jordan. Pleasure connecting.
From InterSystems, this has been the Healthy Data Podcast. I'm Jordan Cooper. Thank you for listening.